welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's Crime in this hour, later on Dragnet from 1954, but first an episode of Gangbusters, heard on the NBC Blue Network on November 1st, 1940. It's the case of the Ape Bandit.
Sloan's Liniment, your faithful friend when muscles ache and pain, presents Gangbusters.
Calling the police, calling the G-Men, calling all Americans to war on the underworld.
Gangbusters brought to you by the makers of Sloan's Liniment. With the cooperation of leading law enforcement officials of the United States, Gangbusters presents facts in the relentless war of the police on the underworld. Authentic case histories that show the never-ending activity of the police in their work of protecting our citizens. America's crusade against crime. Ladies and gentlemen, Colonel H. Norman Schwarzkopf, our regular interviewer, is now serving with the United States Army. However, the colonel is continuing his supervisory duties on Gangbusters by proxy. Now for our proxy interview between Colonel Schwarzkopf and Chief of Police J.P. Coffey of Valdez, North Carolina. Picture our setting as a special office turned over to the colonel by Commissioner Louis J. Valentine of the New York City Police. Colonel Schwarzkopf.
Chief Coffey, this case of Dwight Beard certainly has many unusual angles. As I recall, Beard had a powerful physique and was a star college athlete. His cunning brain used this to make incredible escapes.
That's right, Colonel. After looting a house, Beard would leap from an upper story window to a nearby tree, swing himself to the ground, and then disappear. But Beard was soon apprehended. And the court, believing him sincerely repentant, placed him on probation, never realizing that Beard was already scheming new criminal activities.
I knew I'd never go to jail. I knew if I put on a good crying act, the court would think I was repentant. They caught me once, but they'll never get me again. I have a new plan. All I need is money, and I'm getting that money tonight.
It was on the night of February 18th, 1932, in the little town of Valdez, North Carolina, that Beard went after this money. There, Beard and another man waited for the return of the local storekeeper.
Are you sure this storekeeper will have the money on him tonight, Beard?
I know he will. I also know he'll come up this path to his house.
Where can we hide?
This tree.
Why, you're crazy, Beard. We can't both hide back of this tree.
We won't be back of it. We'll be up it.
What?
Come on, climb.
Okay, Beard, if you say so. All right, come on.
You got it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, do you think this branch will hold both of us?
Sure. There. Now, when our friend passes under the tree, we'll drop down and grab him.
Yeah, that's a good idea, but what if...
Shh. Someone's coming.
It's the storekeeper.
Get ready.
I'm set.
Drop.
Who are you?
No noise. Hand over that money.
No, I won't.
Quiet, Hughes, and that satchel, pal. Grab it.
I got it.
No, help. Give me my money.
I said
give me
quiet. Oh.
Beard, you killed him.
In this brutal manner did Dwight Beard commit his first murder, Colonel. Immediately, printing presses roared as thousands of police circulars were sent to all nearby police departments.
To all police chiefs, urgent, wanted for murder, Dwight Beard, 23, 175 pounds, 5 feet 11 inches, fair complexion, athletic build, reward for his arrest and conviction, notify J.P. Coffey, Chief of Police, Valdez, North Carolina.
Thus, Dwight Beard started his life of crime, Colonel, a hunted man. He was recognized but not captured in Georgia, in Louisiana, and in Florida. But for months, nothing more was heard of Beard. He had taken on a new name. Then, in April of 1933, a significant meeting took place between two men in St. Paul, Minnesota, in an apartment house.
That's my proposition, Wilson. The police will never suspect us. I worked this plan out step by step, ever since I was in college.
I admit you have something unusual, but I don't trust you. Let's put our cards on the table. You say your name is Donald Haynes?
Well?
Let's not kid each other. I know that's not your real name.
Listen, Wilson. As far as you're concerned, my name is Donald Haynes.
Okay, Haynes. Whatever you say.
I need a partner who has the proper underworld connections. You have. You coming in with me? Yes or no?
Well, Haynes, let's put
it... I'll have access to every wealthy home in the city. These rich people have been my friends. It's a setup in a million.
What makes you think that you, a stranger in town, can just walk out and get to know all the ritzy people living around here? Why, it'd be like sending me to New York to crash the 400.
That's right, Wilson. You couldn't do it. But I can.
You sure hate yourself. But I still want to know, how are you going to do it?
With these. These golf sticks are going to open the doors of the wealthy to me.
What?
Yes, Wilson. These golf sticks.
Are you nuts?
It may take a week, it may take a month. But I have each step carefully planned. I start tomorrow on the golf links. And you'll see how I make out. I can't miss. All right. Tee up my ball, Caddy, and we'll see what I do in this last hole.
Yes, Mr. Haynes.
By the way, just what is my score?
Well, Mr. Haynes, I never see such golf shooting all my bone days. There's 3 strokes under the course record already.
Not so bad, eh?
Well, Mr. Haynes, yours is a wizard. You're only a new member of this club, but all the other members been asking me who you is and how you shoot golf so good.
That's so? Let me have the driver.
Yes, sir. It's par 4 on this hole, sir. It's a dog's leg. The green's about 300 yards away.
All right. Here we go. Right over that pond.
Lordy me. Look at that ball go like an old eagle eye right over the pond. Mr. Haynes, you done it on the green and white. You see that? On the green and white.
Not so bad, if I do say so myself.
Oh, wait till the folks back at the clubhouse hear about this golf shoot, Mr. Haynes. They'll never get over talking about it. No, sir, never.
In this way did Dwight Beard, alias Donald Haynes, worm his way into St. Paul, Minnesota society, Colonel. Within a week, he was playing golf with some of the city's wealthiest men. Within a month, he was a welcome guest in some of the city's finest homes. Then Beard and his partner Wilson had a talk in Beard's apartment.
Stage is set, Wilson. All the groundwork is laid. We're ready for action.
Well, Haynes, I've got to hand it to you. You worked this thing out just as you planned. I've read about your social life in the newspapers.
We need money now, and we're going to get it, Wilson. I bought you a chauffeur's uniform and a butler's outfit today.
What for?
It's essential that you drive the car for me.
Oh, I get it.
When I invite these people here, you'll serve tea or drinks, whatever's necessary.
Okay. I'll play the perfect butler or chauffeur or anything you say, Mr. Haynes. So long as we get the dough. What's our first job?
See this invitation?
Donald Haynes, Esquire. Mr. and Mrs. G.B.F. Smythe request the pleasure of your company at a dinner dance to be held in honor of Count and Countess Ziski.
Some visiting celebrities. Can you imagine the wealthy people and all those that jewelry stuff each woman will be wearing in order to impress the Count and Countess?
There'll be a fortune there. Abbott Haynes, are you sure you can pull a job like this alone?
Listen, Wilson. I know every inch of the Smythe's home. I know just what door to enter, so no one will see me. The whole job will take less than 5 minutes.
Sounds okay to me.
This Saturday evening, you'll drive me to the Smythe's. The guests are in for an unexpected surprise. You sure you have all my evening clothes in the back of the car, Wilson?
Sure, Haynes. Collar, shirt, tie, studs, everything.
It's 8:30. Guess they've all probably arrived at this Smythe's by now.
One thing, Haynes. You're supposed to be a guest there yourself. How are you going to rob them without their recognizing you?
That's up to me. Turn up this driveway, Wilson. It's a servant's entrance.
Right.
All right, stop back of this clump of bushes.
Okay. Huh. quite a party in there.
Yeah, a French door is opening into the house on this side. I'll get in that way. You turn the car around and be ready to make a quick getaway when I come out.
Right.
Now, let's see. I think I have everything. A basket, gloves, revolver. I'll just slip on this mask.
Haynes, I don't know if you can do it. There must be at least 30 people in that house.
Don't worry, Wilson. You just be set for a quick getaway.
Okay. Watch your step.
All right, everyone. Don't make a move. Stay right where you are.
He's wearing a mask.
Quiet, quiet. I don't want to have to kill anyone. But no heroics from you men. Now, ladies, start removing your jewelry. Drop it in this basket. You men, empty your pockets.
Well, I don't know.
Come on, come on. I mean business.
This is an outrage.
Quiet.
This is my wedding ring. Do I have
to... You can keep the ring, but not that bracelet.
Thank you. Here's my bracelet.
This is the most terrible thing I've ever
heard. Put it in there. Thanks for the jewelry. I'll be going now, but I'm warning you. I'll kill the first person that starts after me. Good night. Take this basket, Wilson.
Okay, Haynes. Hop in.
Step in it, Wilson. Fast. Pull up by the side of the road, Wilson, while I change to these evening clothes.
Yeah.
Now I gotta get dressed fast.
And then what? After you're all dolled up?
You drive me back to the Smythes, of course. They're expecting me.
You're going back there?
Listen, stupid. 3 minutes ago, these people were held up by a masked gunman in a gray suit, light hat, and tan shoes. 5 minutes later, I arrive in evening clothes as an invited guest.
Yeah?
You think anyone would ever figure that I'm the one who just held them up? Well, when I get back there, if they haven't already called the police, I'll do it for them.
Police records show, Colonel, that Beard pulled more than 50 robberies in this manner.
Yet, Chief Coffey, for all his cunning, it's evident that luck played with him. If anyone had seen Beard in his quick change act, he would have been captured the very first time he tried the plan.
That's true, Colonel. And as you point out, his luck did change. The brakes were all going Beard's way at first, Colonel Schwarzkopf. Then, as is usual between two crooks, trouble broke out one night at Beard's apartment.
Hey, Wilson, come in here.
What's on your mind, Haynes?
I've been doing some figuring. The last 6 months, you've made pretty good money.
Well, haven't you?
Now we're going to make a new agreement. So I'm cutting down on your share. Hand it over or I'll drill you.
Here.
Thanks. This added to my pile makes quite a tidy sum.
You'll let me go now?
To tip off the police when you get outside?
I won't. I swear I won't.
Save your breath, Wilson. I don't need you any longer, and I'm getting rid of you.
All right. But don't shoot me.
I'm not going to shoot you, Wilson. That's too much noise. Back in college, I was a star wrestler. I can snap your neck with my bare hands.
No, no,
I don't need this gun. I'll throw it on the table.
You threw your gun down, but I got one of my own.
Wilson!
Get over against that wall, Haynes. Oh, whatever your name is, get over there.
Are you crazy?
I never did trust you, you crook. Now it's my turn to pick up the dough.
Put that money down. It's mine.
Shut up. Shut your pretty mouth for a change. I'm sick of hearing you blow about how smart you are, how you're the mastermind of crime.
Listen, where are you going?
Thanks for your share of the dough, Mr. Haynes. It makes quite... a tidy sum. So long, pal.
With Wilson gone, Beard had to work alone, Colonel. 2 nights later, in the living room of a wealthy Minneapolis family home.
Marion, dear.
Yes, George?
Well, what are you reading?
Oh, just one of the latest novels. Why don't you get a book and read too, George? You seem so restless tonight.
I was down at police headquarters today.
Yes? Oh, have they traced any of the stolen jewelry?
No, it takes time. Marion, the police have a theory that this epidemic of robberies is the work of one of our friends.
One of our friends?
Yes, the police say that anyone who knew as much about the inside of our homes is the... Marion?
Yes, George?
Didn't you say the servants were all out tonight?
Why, yes, they are. Since we were staying home, I
Wait.
Thought... to... What's the matter?
Listen.
But I'm sure there's no one in the house but us.
Hear that?
Someone's upstairs.
I'm going up. You call the police.
I'm afraid. Let me come with you.
All right, dear. Careful now. We don't want these stairs to squeak.
George.
Yes?
I'm sure I left the light on at the top of the stairs. Someone's turned it out. What's that?
Someone's in this room.
Oh.
I'll open the door.
George!
Oh!
Look, George, are you all right?
There he is.
He's going to jump out that window.
Come on.
Oh.
He fell into the yard.
Is he dead?
No, he's moving. Marion, you call the police. I'm going down there and grab him before he can get away.
Was that another of Beard's jobs, Chief Coffey?
Yes, Colonel. And although badly hurt after jumping from the Smythe's window, he succeeded in getting away. The police began checking all doctors and hospitals. 3 hours later, in a hospital room in Minneapolis...
Nurse. So, you're awake at last.
Who are you?
You know very well who I am. You're under arrest.
You want me for a robbery?
No, we've got your partner Wilson to answer the robbery charges. We want you for something else.
What? Why am I under arrest?
It's an easy thing to change your name from Beard to Haynes or any other name you choose. But there's one thing you can't change, Dwight Beard. Your fingerprints.
Fingerprints?
We took them while you were asleep. We know your whole record, particularly the crime you committed at Valdese, North Carolina.
No. I didn't have any...
You're all washed up, Beard. You're going back to North Carolina to be tried for murder.
Chief Coffey, I know that Beard was immediately returned to North Carolina. Was he convicted of murder?
Yes, Colonel, after a long court battle. Then an unexpected thing happened. Beard's sentence was commuted to life imprisonment. A year passed, then one night in the prison yard at North Carolina State Prison.
Hey, Beard.
Oh, hello, Connie.
I thought your leg was broke, but I just saw you walking as good as anyone.
That was a stall. I always pretended my leg was hurt after I left the hospital. The guards figured they don't have to watch me as closely as the others.
Yeah?
But after tonight, they won't have to watch me. I'm getting over that wall tonight.
Well, you got a ladder?
No. I'm jumping over.
Don't kid me, Beard. That's a 12-foot wall. Even a kangaroo couldn't hop that.
Come over here, Connie.
Okay.
See this long pole I have hidden against this wall?
Yeah.
Ever see a pole vaulter?
You mean one of those guys that jumped...
I used to pole vault when I was in college. And tonight I'm vaulting over that wall.
Over a 12-foot wall?
Yeah. They even break the world's record. But it's going to be strictly unofficial.
Attention, prison break. Dwight Beard, murderer, escaped from North Carolina State Prison at Raleigh. Beard is 5 feet 11, 175 pounds, light complexion, athletic build, extremely dangerous. May be riding freight train heading south. Watch all trains heading south.
Okay, down there, Sheriff.
Yeah, Beard's not hiding on this freight. You can signal the engineer to go ahead.
Okay. All clear. All clear.
Pull over there.
Yes, Mr.
Officer. See any white man along the roads as you came through?
No, sir, boss. I ain't seen no one but myself all the time.
All right, get going.
Meanwhile, two police officers talked in Dallas, Texas.
Officer Roberts, I'm certain that Dwight Beard is somewhere in the Southwest.
If he's here, we'll get him, Sheriff. Police departments in every town in the country have circulars on Beard with full descriptions. He can't hide out forever.
No, sooner or later, we'll get him.
Yes. I wonder what it feels like to be a hunted man every minute of the day and night.
River's like ice. But I gotta get across. They're after me. after me with bloodhounds. Won't let me rest night and day. Everywhere, cops. Driving me crazy. They won't let me sleep. I can't sleep.
It was on the night of December 23rd, 1936, that Dwight Beard arrived in Dallas, Texas, Colonel. But he was no longer the self-confident college man who had a plan for the perfect crime. Down at the heels, shifty-eyed, he slunk along a Dallas side street and walked up to a store.
Yes? You wish something?
Listen, guy, hand over your money or I'll kill you. I swear I will.
No. Don't. Here, take the money.
That's better. If you try to follow me, I'll kill you.
Help! Hold up! Help!
You dirty rat!
What's wrong here? Officer Roberts, I've just been held up. Man in the gray sweater. He ran down that cellar.
Get back, all you people. Out of the way. Get back, all of you.
Officer Roberts, don't go down here. Here's a gun. Officer Roberts! Are you hurt bad?
Somebody killed a cop.
Yes, sir. Yes, it's Officer Roberts.
Call an ambulance. Get help. Do something. Help.
Officer John Roberts was dead, Colonel.
The second murder chalked up against...
Descriptions given by the storekeeper and the witnesses, Dallas police, who had memorized Beard's wanted circulars, soon knew that Dwight Beard was the murderer. And emergency squads were hurriedly ordered to converge on the area where Beard was last seen.
All right, you men. Take up your positions back of this wall. The killer's hiding in that garage. Train your machine guns on the door of that garage.
Right, Captain.
Yes, sir.
You other squads over there in position?
Yes, sir.
Keep down, everyone. Hey, you in the garage. We know you're Dwight Beard. You're completely surrounded. Come out before we open fire. All right, men. Now we'll give him a taste of his own medicine. Put a round of machine gun bullets through the roof of the garage.
Captain?
Yes?
I'm up here in this fire escape. I can see the killer. He's climbed out on the roof of the garage.
What?
And there's a truck parked in the street. He's going to try and jump in it and get away.
Come on, men. Follow me.
There's the gunman. He's going to jump. Pass. Grab him.
Oh.
I've got him.
I'm hurt. Let me go.
Get up on your feet. Here, put her handcuffs on.
I didn't do anything. I'm hurt. I didn't do anything.
You thought you could jump to that truck and get away. A college athlete, huh? Come on, Dwight Beard. Start walking. Your jumping days are over.
And so, Colonel Schwarzkopf, for the second time in his life, Dwight Beard was arrested and tried for murder. But this time, the death sentence was carried out. Dwight Beard was electrocuted June 6, 1937, in the prison at Huntsville, Texas.
Thank you, Chief Coffey, for bringing us the facts in this case of Dwight Beard, the ape bandit. It's too bad that a college education, athletic ability, and social accomplishments should have been used to rob good householders and snuff out the lives of law-abiding citizens. All because he would not learn the fundamental truth that crime never pays.
And now, the clues.
Warning, citizens of Southwest, watch for escaped Texas badman Charles G. Duffield, 24, 5 feet 9 inches, 147 pounds, black hair, brown eyes, tattoo, word chief, upper outer left arm, tattoo, emblem, heart and dagger with bird and ribbon, outer right arm. This man, notorious Dallas robber, escaped last week from State Prison Farm in Texas.
Attention, citizens of Western states. Beware man 6 feet or more, 200 pounds, dark bushy hair, small mustache, wearing dark trousers and jacket which look new. This man wanted for robbery last week of store and for subsequent kidnapping and beating of woman, leaving woman unconscious along road, Ely, Nevada.
Caution, citizens of Pacific Coast. Be on lookout for bank robber, 35, 5 feet, 6 inches, 130 pounds, fair complexion, wore dark double-breasted suit, gray cap, carried .38 caliber blue steel revolver,
This man wanted for robbery last week. Bank, Los Angeles, California.
If you have any information concerning these clues, notify your local police or gangbusters at once. Next week, the amazing case of the ruthless gang leader who used dynamite as his tool. Train after train laid waste, innocent victims killed, and the fiend who thought he could escape. Hear how alert police authorities caught this gang through sheer persistence and scientific investigation. You friends of Sloan's Liniment are in for another treat as Phillips H. Lord opens chapter 213 in the officially endorsed America's Crusade Against Crime.
Police, calling the G-Men, calling all Americans to war on the underworld.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Gangbusters, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 1st, 1940 on the NBC Blue Network. This is an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Dragnet, with an episode heard on NBC on June 22, 1954, and a little less than a year later was seen on the television version in March of 1955. It's the story, The Big Customer.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. A special officer has been shot during a routine patrol. His assailants have escaped into the city. There's no lead to their whereabouts. Your job, find them.
It was Saturday, May 21st. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Spidey. We were on our way back from the scene, and it was 10:56 p.m. when we got to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. Treatment room.
That you, doctor?
No, ma'am. Police officers. Doctor said we could ask you some questions.
About the robbery?
Yes, ma'am. It's my partner, Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
Hello, Ms. Montgomery.
You heard anything about Keith? Is he all right?
Well, the doctor's still with him.
Is he going to be all right?
We better talk to the doctor about that, I think.
He tried to stop the man from robbing us. Tried to throw him out of the store.
Yes, ma'am. Now, can you tell us what happened?
Well, I guess so, if the doctor said I could.
Well, anytime you don't feel like going on, just tell us, please.
All right.
What time did the man come into the store?
About 9:30, right around in there.
Yeah.
Keith and me were sitting in the back room playing cribbage. We usually play a couple of games before we close up, especially when business is kind of slow.
Uh-huh.
These two men came in. Keith went out to wait on them.
Did you go with him?
No, wasn't any reason to. Just two customers, no reason for me to go out. Looked like they came in together.
You could see them from where you were, huh?
Oh, yes. We had the card table set up right in the doorway of the back room.
All right, ma'am, so I could go on?
Well, Keith went out and asked them what they wanted.
Yeah.
One of them said he wanted a bottle of vodka. Keith asked him what kind, and the man said it didn't make any difference, said he wanted 100 proof, though.
Uh-huh.
Keith got the bottle off the shelf and came back. Told the man how much the bottle was, and that's when the other man pulled out the knife.
You say the second man drew the knife, huh?
That's right. Short fellow. Had this kind of knife with a spring blade where you push a button and the blade snaps out, you know how?
Yes, ma'am.
Did the men know you were in the back room?
He must have. All he had to do was look through the door and they'd have seen me. I wasn't trying to hide.
All right. Feel like going on?
Yes. The doctor gave me some kind of pill. It makes me a little numb, but I feel all right.
All right. Could you please go ahead? Now, what happened after they pulled this knife?
Well, the short one told Keith to give him the money. Said it was a holdup.
Could you remember his exact words?
Oh, I don't know. Seems he said, all right, old man, this is a stick-up. Put all the money in the register in a paper bag and don't cause any trouble. That's as near as I can remember, that's what he said.
All right, what happened then?
Well, Keith told him to get out of the store. Said the two of them were too young to get mixed up in that kind of foolishness. Told him to get right out.
Yeah.
Little fella, the short one with the knife, grabbed Keith and told him they weren't playing games, but if he knew what was good for him, he'd do like he was told. Had the knife right at his chest. Thought he was going to cut Keith.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I came out of the back room when I thought they were going to hurt Keith.
All right. You go on, please.
Yes. I want to get this over and tell you what you need to know so you can catch the fellas.
All right, ma'am. What happened when you came into the store?
Well, I tried to get the men out of the place, told them that if they knew what was good for them, they'd leave right then.
Uh-huh.
Might as well have been talking to a wall. They didn't pay any attention to me.
Yeah.
Well, that's when I tried to get to the phone. I wanted to call the police.
What was your husband doing at this time?
Standing there trying to keep from moving into the knife. This short little fellow had it pressed right against his chest. Had the point right here. Keith made any kind of a move, he'd have been stabbed.
Uh-huh.
When they saw me go to the phone, the tall one grabbed me and hit me with his fist closed. He hit me about as hard as he could. As soon as he did that, Keith seemed to go crazy. Wrenched himself away from the one with the knife and jumped on the tall man and fought him as hard as he could.
Yeah.
Terrible the way it happened.
Yes, ma'am.
The tall man hit Keith along the neck with the edge of his hand and knocked my husband down. Then the little fellow jumped on him, held his knife right at his throat and told him to take the money and put it in a bag, that he didn't want any more trouble or he'd kill us both. All the time he had the knife right here at Keith's throat.
Yes, ma'am. Your husband did what they said?
That's right. He opened the register and gave him the money, put it in a paper bag. I thought they'd leave after that, but they didn't. Only made him madder.
Why was that, you know?
It wasn't enough money, only about $30 or $35. They said we had more in the back room, and they wanted that, too. Said for us to get it or they'd kill us.
Well, did you get it for them?
Yes. I went back and took it out from where we hid it, handed it right over.
Mm-hmm.
What'd the doctor say about Keith? He must have said something.
Frank, would you check with Dr. Sebastian and see what's going on in there?
Yeah, I will.
Would you go on, please?
After they got the other money, the two men left the store. Put the cash in the paper bag and walked out. Said for me to stay still for 5 minutes or they'd come back and kill Keith and me.
Mm-hmm. When did the special officer come into the store?
We didn't.
Ma'am?
He drove up when we were arguing with the men on the sidewalk. And after they left the store, Keith got up and ran after them, tried to hold them.
Well, did the officer know what was going on?
No, not at first. He thought it was just an argument. When he walked up, Keith tried to tell him that the store was being robbed, but the tall robber said it was just a personal fight, that it didn't concern anybody else but Keith and him.
Were you on the sidewalk at the time?
Yes, right beside Keith.
I see.
The robber said that Keith was just an old crackpot trying to cause trouble, that the officer should forget about it.
Yeah.
I guess it didn't sound very good to him because he said it'd be better if Keith and the men talked to a policeman. That's when the tall hold-up man grabbed the gun and shot.
At the officer?
Yes. He grabbed the gun out of his holster and shot him in the stomach.
What happened then?
The smaller of the two stabbed Keith a couple of times, and both of them ran down the street.
Did you see where they went?
Yes. They got into a car that was parked about a half a block away, jumped into the car and left.
All right, Miss Montgomery, just a couple more questions now. Did either of the two men use a name at any time?
What do you mean?
Well, when they were talking to each other, did they use a name of any kind? Do you remember?
Yes. When they shot the officer, the big one, he did the shooting. He said, "Come on, Hank. Let's get out of here." Like that, he said it.
I see. Now, was there anything outstanding about the two men that you can remember? Anything that would make them easier for us to identify?
Oh, I can't think of anything right off. Just that one was tall and the other one was short. That's all I can think of.
About how tall, do you remember?
The big one?
Yes.
Oh, over 6 feet. I'd say he was about 6 feet three, maybe even more.
Mm-hmm. Did he have any special marks or scars that you can recall?
No, nothing like that.
Now, how about the short one? Anything to make it easier for us to identify him?
Just his fingernails.
How do you mean?
They looked like he'd never cleaned them. Real long and dirty, I remember that.
Was there anything else?
No.
Did either of them speak with any kind of an accent, would you remember?
No, sounded just like anybody else. Nothing special about him.
I see.
Joe?
Yeah, Frank?
See you, Miss.
Yeah.
Did you find out about Keith? Did you talk to the doctor?
He'll be right in to see you, Miss Montgomery.
Is Keith going to be all right? Why don't you tell me what's happened?
Try to take it easy, ma'am. The doctor will be right in.
All right, but tell him to hurry, please, please.
Yes, we'll do that. Did you call county?
Yeah, we're operating on Holman.
How's he doing?
Well, as soon as they got the bullet out, he should make it. Wound's not serious.
What about Keith Montgomery?
He just died. Knife wound.
The story we'd gotten from Irene Montgomery was pretty much the same as Special Officer Kenneth Holman had given us. Immediately after the robbery, a local and an APB had gone out on the suspects. In canvassing the neighborhood, the investigating officers had found two eyewitnesses to the shooting stabbing. A man and a woman had been parked in an automobile directly across the street from the Montgomery store. They'd been able to give us a description of the car that the suspects had driven away from the scene, along with the last three numbers on the license plate. While Frank and I had been talking to Mrs. Montgomery, officers Benson and Herman from robbery detail had been going through the Department of Motor Vehicle records looking for the owner's name. Information on the method of operation used in the crime was sent to the stats office and the run was started. The moniker file at R&I was checked for a suspect with the nickname Hank, who matched the description of the smaller thief. The two eyewitnesses were brought into the city hall to go through the mug books for a possible identification. While Frank went to the office to check with Benson and Herman, I worked with the witnesses.
No. Mm-mm. No, not on this page.
How about here?
No, I don't see him here either.
All right.
Oh, wait a minute. This fellow here, see?
This one?
Yeah, it's not the hold-up man, but he's got the same kind of ears. Close to his head like... Yeah, same kind of ears.
You're sure it's not the man, though?
Uh-uh. He's got ears like him.
All right, Mr. Steele, would you go on, please, here?
Mm-hmm. I remember those ears. I used to go to school with a kid that had ears like that.
That's it.
Mean kid. I'll never forget him. I guess I thought of him for at least 15 years. I'll never forget him, though. Mean?
Yes, sir.
He waited for me after school once. I had a big fight. I don't even know what it was about. Big fight. He would have beat me up.
Yes, sir.
Sure like to meet him now. It'd be a different story.
Yes, sir. Now, how about right here? Do you see either of the suspects on these pages?
No. No picture in this book. You got another one?
Yeah, I got it. All right.
Say, how many more got of these things, anyhow?
There's quite a few. You can see them right here on the shelves.
You want me to go through all of them?
Well, we'd like to have you check the pictures, yes, sir.
That's going to take a while.
You and your wife are the only two people who can give us an identification.
Well, how about the woman who was held up? What's her name, Mrs. Holman?
No, Montgomery. Holman was the officer who was shot.
Yeah, yeah. What about Mrs. Montgomery? Can't she tell you about the robbers?
She's under the care of her doctor. Her husband died, you know.
What, from being stabbed?
Yes, sir, that's right.
That's too bad. We didn't know what it was all about, you know?
Yes, sir.
Me and Harry are just sitting there. All of a sudden, there's this fight and a shot. We didn't know what the freaks was.
Yes, sir. I wonder if we can go on with the books here.
Oh, yeah.
Now, how about right here?
No. No, not here.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Say, he's mean. What'd he do?
Robbery.
Yeah, yeah, you can tell. Look at the face. You can always tell.
Yeah, see?
No, I don't see him here. Perry.
Sir?
Perry Nicholson. That's the guy's name. One of the close ears. I remember it now. Haven't thought in. 15 years. Perry Nicholson.
Bully. Yes, sir.
If you like to meet old Perry now, it'd be a different story. If he wanted to fight now, different story.
Yes, sir.
Joe.
Yeah?
A hold-up car.
Yeah.
They just found it, abandoned.
Two officers in a radio unit had found the car in a parking lot at the corner of Rosemont Avenue and Waterloo. When the vehicle was discovered and the similarity to the description that had been broadcast was noticed, the car was put under surveillance and our office had been notified. Frank and I left the city hall and drove out to the parking lot immediately. The car was placed under surveillance again, and we checked it through DMV. We found the car was owned by an Edwin Vargas, 1879 Moss Street out in Burbank. We checked the name through R&I, but we found that he had no criminal record in our file. We drove out to see Vargas. While Frank covered the rear of the place, I rang the bell of the house and waited.
Yeah?
Like to see Mr. Vargas?
Well, he's not in right now. Anything I can do?
You know where he is?
No, I imagine he got held up downtown, probably working late.
I wonder if it'll be all right if I wait for him.
I'm not sure. You mind telling me who you are?
Sorry. Police officer. My name's Friday.
What'd the cops want Ed for?
Might be better if we talk to him.
You alone?
Anybody else in the house, ma'am?
No.
Your husband owned a 1953 dark blue Ford sedan?
Yes.
You driving it tonight, is he?
Well, sure. He took it to work with him this morning.
All right. Might be better if I waited inside, huh?
All right. Come on in. I don't know what this is all about, but you can bet it's some kind of mistake. Ed's never had no trouble with the cops. Never. None.
Mm-hmm. Where's that door lead over here?
Bedroom.
All right, if I take a look?
Well, go ahead. You ain't going to find anything.
What's that over there, the bathroom?
Yeah.
All right, just the one bedroom?
No need for any more. Me and Ed don't have any children.
Kitchen this way?
Yeah. Say, if you're looking for something, maybe if you'll tell me what it is, I can help you.
You just want to check the house, ma'am. This all the rest of the house?
I told you, we don't need any more room.
I see. Just unlocking your back door, ma'am. My partner's out there. All right, Frank.
Is he here?
No.
Who is this, another cop?
This is my partner, Frank Smith, Miss Vargas.
Hello.
Seems to me you should be able to tell me what this is all about, Mr. Friday.
Can you give us a description of your husband?
Why?
It might help us to get him out of trouble, maybe.
He's in no trouble. You got something on your back and you're trying to dump it on Ed and it isn't going to work.
You want to give us a description?
What do you want to know?
How tall is your husband?
6'3".
How old?
32.
What color is his hair?
Kind of sandy. Look, what is this, a third degree? What are you trying to prove with all these questions?
I just want to get at the truth, ma'am.
It's a kind of hard way to do it, if you ask me.
Well, I'm sorry for causing any trouble.
You are.
Where does your husband work?
He's a salesman.
Who for, ma'am?
Insurance company downtown.
You usually work this late?
No, I told you that.
But you think he's at work tonight?
Yes.
Well, then you wouldn't mind if we called him, would you?
I'm not going to have you causing him any embarrassment.
Well, don't worry about it, Ms. Vargas. Would you like to give us the number?
It's in the phone book. Look under emergency numbers.
You want me to call him?
Yeah.
Look, what do you think he's done?
Police business, ma'am.
I'm his wife. I got a right to know.
It'll be better if we talk to him, I think.
That's what you say.
Your husband ever been in trouble with the police before?
Not that I know of.
How long you lived here?
You mean in California?
That's right.
I was born here.
How about your husband?
He's been here a couple of years.
Where's he from?
New York State.
Where in New York State?
A little place right outside of Utica.
You ever been in trouble back there, would you know?
Well, if he was, he didn't say anything to me about it.
How long has he had the job?
Since the week after he came out. Ed's a smart guy. He'd have no trouble getting work.
How about it?
I talked to the building superintendent.
Yeah.
He says Vargas left at 5:30 this afternoon.
The description of the owner of the car used in the holdup, coupled with his absence, made him a prime suspect in the robbery. We continued to talk to his wife. She gave us some of the background on Vargas. She told us that they'd only been married a little over a year, and that they were still trying to pay off the debts that her husband had incurred before their marriage. She went on to say that in the last few days, he'd been depressed about their finances, and that on that morning, Vargas had said he'd figured a way out for them. Frank called the office, and the broadcast was gotten out, asking that the man be picked up and detained for questioning. 1:15 a.m. We asked Mrs. Vargas about her husband's friends.
Isn't anyone Ed's real close to?
Well, is there one man he's with more than the others, would you know? Maybe somebody he works with.
No. Unless maybe it's Vic. Ed don't have much to do with him, though. He knows I don't care for him. Don't like to have him around.
Who's that, man?
Vic Noble. He works in the same office as Ed.
And what's he look like?
Oh, not much. Little guy, kind of nondescript. Never did figure out he could be a good salesman. I'd never buy anything from him. Honestly, it makes me nervous just to have him around.
Yes, sir.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes, go right ahead. If it's your husband, it might be better if you didn't tell him we were here.
All right. Hello? Yeah, honey, where you been? What? Well, do you know when? Uh-huh. Well, did you call the police? Well, you should have called them right away. Yeah. No, I'll drive right down and pick you up. You wait right there. Uh-huh. Well, right away. That's right. Well, look, tell me where it is. Oh, yeah, I know. Turn left, yeah. All right, I'll find it. You wait right there, will you? All right, goodbye. Bye. That was Ed.
Yeah.
You're going to have to find yourself another boy.
Ma'am.
Well, whatever this is, it has something to do with Ed's car, doesn't it?
That's right.
And then you're all wrong about Ed. He couldn't have had anything to do with it.
What do you mean?
Ed's car was stolen tonight.
We got the address of the bar where Ed Vargas had called from. Frank and I drove down and talked to him. He told us that he'd left work and stopped in the bar for a couple of drinks before he went home. However, when he left the place, he found that his car was gone. He returned to the bar and spent the next several hours trying to figure out what to do. We talked to the bartender, and he verified Vargas' statement that he'd been in the place all evening. He was released from custody and allowed to return home. Frank and I continued to talk to the bartender.
Got to get ready to close up pretty quick.
Just a couple more questions.
Will you mind if I clean up the back bar while we talk?
No, sir. Go right ahead.
Thanks. Well, what do you want to know?
Well, you told us that Vargas came in about 5:45. Is that right?
Near as I can remember, yeah. Give or take a couple of minutes on either side.
But he was here before 7.
For sure.
You meet anybody here?
How far is this going to go?
What do you mean?
Is your wife going to find out if I tell you?
Not from us.
Well, Ed and the missus haven't been getting along so good lately. You know, been beefing a lot.
Yeah.
Ed's a funny guy. He don't like no trouble at home. As soon as Sarah started giving him problems, he found another girl, a kid that works in his office. They usually drop in here for a couple of drinks before he goes home.
Yeah.
Nothing serious going on with them. Just they like to sit and talk. Ed's all the time telling her how this wife doesn't understand him. Old line, but I think he means it.
He was in here with a girl tonight, was he?
Yeah. Just like all week. Every night, they come in about 4:45. Sit in the back booth, have a couple of martinis, and then they leave. I think maybe Ed drops her off on the way home. She don't have a car.
Yeah.
Tonight, they had more than just a couple of drinks. I think maybe there was something wrong, you know, a little problem.
What about?
Look, people come in here to relax. They all got something on their minds. I make it a practice not to eavesdrop or interfere.
What was their problem, do you know?
Sarah won't hear it?
No, we told you before.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't want her to come around here causing no beef. She's jealous, you know, real jealous.
That's so?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, Ed must have told the girl that he was thinking of leaving his wife, because tonight she told him to do something about her or she was walking out. Had a little kind of tiff, and then she left. After that, he went out to get the car and found it had been stolen.
Where'd he leave it, do you know?
A lot behind the building.
Did he leave the keys in the car?
I don't know. You saw him when he left, carrying a big load. He don't remember. Probably did, though.
You have anybody else in here tonight that looked like Vargas?
What do you mean?
Well, as tall as he was, maybe.
A lot of tall people come in here.
Yes, we understand. Were there any tonight?
A couple, yeah.
Any of them come in with a short fellow, about 5, 6, or 7?
Yeah.
What time did they come in?
Oh, about a little after 7.
When'd they leave?
Well, I don't know. Maybe 7:30, 7:45. I'm not sure. There's one of the tables back there. I served them a couple of times. Didn't take much notice when they left. They paid for the drinks when I brought them, left a half a buck tip, took off.
They come in here regular, do they?
Yeah, a couple times a week, maybe more.
They usually together?
Oh, never seen them any other way except once. I'd rather not remember that time.
What do you mean?
Came in here early, spent the whole night here boozing, got pretty plastered. I had to take Nick home. He couldn't make it alone.
Which one is Nick?
The short one, little guy.
What's he do for a living?
Nothing I ever heard of.
Well, how does he live?
Any way he can. Always seems to have dough. I think maybe some kind of gambler, something like that. Always loaded. The way he looks, though, you'd think he was some kind of mechanic, but he's not.
Is that right?
Sure, he dresses nice, always got a good suit on, but he doesn't know how to carry it off.
What do you mean?
His fingernails. I don't think he ever cleans them.
We got complete descriptions of the two men. They matched those of the thieves perfectly. The bartender closed the place and took us down the street to a hotel where he said he'd taken Nick Roxford. We talked to the desk clerk, but we found that Roxford had moved several months before. By checking with some of the people in the hotel, we got a forwarding address for him. It was a cheap rooming house down on South Pico. Frank and I went by the city hall and ran the name through R&I. We found that Roxford had an arrest record for petty theft and ADW. He'd served a term in the county jail and was at present under the jurisdiction of the court. His mugshot was pulled and taken out to the witnesses for identification. We checked with the manager of the boarding house, and we found that Roxford and a Henry Larson were registered in one of the rooms. In the company of the manager, we went up to the room, but the pair wasn't in. We contacted the office and told them where we were. They told us that Roxford had been positively identified as one of the holdup men. We settled down to wait for the suspects to come back. 3:30 a.m. 4. 5. 5:15 a.m.
Sounds like somebody's coming.
There wasn't no other way. You was there, didn't see you doing nothing to stop it. You shot the cop.
I still think so.
All right, hold it right there.
What are you doing here?
Police officers, you're under arrest.
Watch it, Frank!
All right, look out, Frank! Get up.
They made it kind of rough, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
All right, come on.
Get up. Come on, get on your feet.
Let us take them downtown.
Yeah. I better check the cuffs. Don't want them too tight.
No, you might hurt them, huh? Two suspects were taken downtown to the interrogation room. Henry Larson was handcuffed to the chair in robbery while Frank and I talked to Nick Roxford.
It's a bad beef. I know it. You guys are going to find out.
Why don't you tell us about it?
You're going to tie no robbery rap to me.
Look, we've already done it. The witnesses gave us a positive identification on you.
How could they? They never seen me.
We got a picture of you. It's pretty good.
You want to tell us about it?
I got nothing to say. I want a lawyer. I ain't going to talk till I see a lawyer.
All right?
Yeah.
You know the old man died?
I don't know nothing about no old man.
His wife says you're the one who stabbed him.
She's crazy.
She's willing to take it to court.
It'll never stick.
We think it will.
I think we can make you for first degree.
What about Hank?
Who, Larson?
Yeah, what happens to him?
Same charge.
You know it yet?
No, you're the first one to hear.
What if I give you a hand?
How do you mean that?
Well, suppose I tell you it was Hank's idea, the whole thing. Go any better with me?
You know we don't decide that.
Oh, it seems like if I helped you, you'd be better with me.
All right, you want to tell us about it?
I'll make you a deal.
No deals.
Look, just promise me you won't tell Hank if I give you the real story, huh?
All right, go ahead.
Well, the whole thing was his idea right from the start. He cased the store. The whole thing was his idea.
What about the car?
Well, that was Hank's, too. He spotted it, said it'd make a good deal. You check the car, you'll find his prints all over it.
All right, what happened after that at the store?
Well, it was Hank again. I didn't want no part of it. Hank made me. Said if I backed out, he'd get me. He's a big man. He gets mean when he's crossed. I wasn't about to give him no trouble.
Go ahead.
Well, we got to the place, and he made me go in. He made me take a piece of the action.
Now, wait a minute. Let's back up here and get this straight. You trying to tell me all the time you wanted no part of it?
No. No, you got to believe it.
The way we got it, you were having a time with a knife.
Well, I got scared, that's all. I got scared. I didn't know what I was doing.
Sure you did.
Look, you got to believe me. I'm telling the truth. It was all Hank's idea, the whole thing. I want no part of it. Never did.
All right, just keep your voice down, will you?
I told you. Now, you know about the whole thing. You won't tell Hank, will you?
What difference does it make?
If he finds out I told you, he'll kill me.
Remember I asked you before?
Huh?
What difference does it make?
Henry Taylor Larson and Nicholas John Roxford were tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. On recommendation of the jury, they received maximum sentence and were executed in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary, San Quentin, California.
Dragnet is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Dragnet, on Tuned To Yesterday, an NBC and Armed Forces Radio Service broadcast from June 22, 1954. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned To Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.